You're listening to Under the Influence. Part 1. A reading by Alice Hattrick and Naomi Pierce.
Hello, my love. I heard a kiss from you. Red magic satin playing near two. All through the morning rain again. The sun doesn't shine. Rainbows and waterfalls run through my mind.
Dear Naomi, I've often wondered whether we're best friends, you and I, and what that means in the proper sense. A heart-shaped charm that reads best on one side and friends on the other. It doesn't make sense split in two. That's why it has meaning. We behave as friends do, emotionally and intellectually. But girlfriends tell each other everything, don't they?
Dear Alice, I've been trying to think recently about the moment of influence. When influence happens, it's such a messy, unrestricted process, like the way germs spread. When does association get misread as influence?
Since March, we've written emails to each other about material in the Women's Art Library archive with the subject Under the Influence. This was an exercise to articulate our own experience of friendship. We've aimed to do this by misreading or overreading with the material, implicating ourselves in a fictionalized network of influence. These emails are, of course, not the only correspondence we've engaged in during this time. We've worked together on projects and edited each other's essays. We're friends. We talk and text and email all the time. We even talk and email about the Under the Influence emails.
It's clear from our correspondence that we've spent time together, that we keep in touch by other means. There are 26 emails in total. They are different to other emails, written under observation, in the knowledge that their destination is public. We spend time on our emails to each other, but they are received almost instantaneously. The ones we quote from focus specifically upon a collection of correspondence in the archive. Early on in our research, Althea told us about defiant objects. Archival material that was difficult, awkward, hard to define. In our emails, we change this to deviant objects without even realizing. Stylistically, our emails share qualities with her description of defiant objects. They masquerade as private correspondence. Their purpose is to defy easy categorization.
Althea showed us letters written by a woman called Jill to her friend Sarah in the late 70s and 80s. They're catalogued under the Sarah Satchel letters. She showed them to Holly Pester during her residency on the subject of gossip. According to Holly, secondhand, the art never comes into focus. We asked each other questions. What if the art never comes into focus? What would this coming into focus look like anyway? In what ways could we read these letters on their own terms, beyond accepted ideas of artistic influence? We're both really into this book by Elizabeth Freeman about queer time. in which she writes, "Queer temporalities are points of resistance to this temporal order that, in turn, propose other possibilities for living in relation to indeterminately past, present and future others, that is, of living historically."
Correspondence between men often evidences intellectual influence. Women, on the other hand, supposedly keep in touch. They share everything, confess and confide. Why do we have to undermine intimacy to achieve artistic influence? We wanted to find a way to narrate our influence on each other and between women of different generations, writing intimate documents, as women do.
First of October 2013. Dear Naomi, we'll find instances of influence because we're looking for them. We will imbue mute objects with our own significance, drawing lines between things. We will misread influence as evidence of our friendship, of our effect on each other. Finding and discovering are acts of desire.
I got your letter. Thanks a lot.
There is being a bad influence, and there is being under the influence, persuaded away from good behaviour, behaving badly, thinking badly. I am thinking of the women we read and write about, the ones who continue to shape our thinking, the ones who become characters in our alternative worlds. Maybe they're bad influences. Maybe our response to the archival material, conversations and correspondence between artists from previous generations, will be inappropriate. Maybe it should be.
We wanted to extend these ideas into the process of writing. We invited artist, writer and art practice PhD candidate Linda Stupart, whose work we have followed at a distance, to act as mediator, editor, troublemaker and guerrilla interpreter. We copied her into our emails. Linda's presence in our correspondence causes a willful breach in privacy, of which we are aware at the time of writing. In conversations outside these emails, online and IRL, we have often wondered if Linda wants our emails in her inbox, whether she reads them, whether we're influencing her and her us, and if it's all too much. Until last week, she has been silent. Email from Linda, 6th of November 2014. This is a brief note to say. Of course, I looked for my name, and the first thing I saw was that I had left a conference early. I probably wasn't bored, though, more likely anxious or wet. I remember trying to come to a conference at the RCA and being rained on loads. Also, as soon as I saw the questions about what happened that night, I became more interested and immediately disgusted in myself for this interest.
Linda shared Kathy Acker's dead doll humility text on Facebook. "Everyone should read this," she wrote. It's a polemic on writing, voice, and the law. Quote, "Decided that since what she wanted to do was just to write, not to find her own voice, could and would write by using anyone's voice, anyone's text, whatever material she wanted to use." Acker writes about being charged with plagiarism and obscenity. She copies in the authoritative language of legal documents, devouring it like every other kind of language. She loses. Quote, "Lost more than a struggle about the appropriation of four pages, about the definition of appropriation. Lost her belief that there can be art in this culture. Lost spirit."
Influence demands collaboration. Alice and I have worked together a lot in the past. We read each other's writing, we edit and adjust. Sometimes I read the things I've written and don't recognise myself. Authorship gets blurry. I came to the Women's Art Library 2 years ago to research women's groups in the 1970s and 80s. I wanted to think about how women talk to each other and how their relationships are formed and transformed by the clauses or subclauses of administrative documents. The stuff that plays out around events, a kind of marginal text. I started with Heresies and Feminist Art Newsletter, but read the letters to the editors, not the articles. Writing tools make communities possible. The groups or institutions we collaborate through also have influence. In her role as curator of the Women's Art Library, we refer to Althea as the gatekeeper. She too is embroiled in the fiction, entering our conversations. Perhaps in a way she is another correspondent or collaborator. She is certainly an influence. Fifth of April 2014. Dear Alice, defiant objects is perfect. Awkwardness has agency suddenly. Althea said the term helps archivists deal with these things that refute categories, like disciplining a difficult child. In the margins I've written, awkward through exclusion, defined by confrontation. My notes are always a mess. Why do we get stuck? I don't know what or who this relates to. Stuck in certain issues, I guess, or ways of reading ourselves and each other. Althea gave us a load of names, women of potential influence. Or maybe they are nodes in a network, links in the chain. Kathy Batista describes her project as part of the recovery process for a set of relatively overlooked and inaccurately historicized practices. Our task must be less faithful. I want to reanimate and resuscitate, like Frankenstein maybe. We should create a monster.
The Sarah Satchel letters were donated recently. In an email to Althea, Sarah gives context to her friend Jill and their correspondence. She was a ceramic artist, originally from Thaden-Bois, and we met on foundation at Colchester. She trained at Stoke, was based in the Potteries, then London. I went to Nottingham Trent to do embroidery. We wrote to each other regarding our work and responses to our world. We were influenced by Doris Lessing and Anne Nin. She struggled with depression. Looking back, I think she was possibly even bipolar, and sadly she committed suicide. I miss her to this day, and though I have not been able to reread any of her letters, I was compelled to keep them. I would like to pass them on to the library. I think someone will find they're relevant to study. There are no replies in the collection. This is a one-sided correspondence. Sarah doesn't know what happened to her letters to Jill. In one letter, sent from her sister's house in Haddenham, Jill suggests that one day they should read the letters back together when they're older, when they're different people. It occurred to me the other day that to write to each other over the years is to send a diary into the other one's keeping, not for posterity, but for ourselves to know it exists, and that we can each have access to it at some stage. What do you mean you just burnt all mine? This letter makes us especially sad, because neither of them were able to do that. Althea showed them to us because of our interest in correspondence and friendship. We found ourselves reading them together, our hearts breaking. Letter to Sarah from Jill, dated February 1984, from 9 Wren Street, London. Jill has just slept with a friend of a friend after a very good party. I need to move again, she writes. I need a fresh start. Everyone in London seems to move all the time. I need to live a homey life, so that I can decide if I'm going to stay 1.5 years in the workshops, or only a few more months. Jill has been getting stoned in the workshop and has returned to Sarah's letter, edged in black. She's rereading it so she can get a bit more sense of it, and writes back, mostly about sex. Sex isn't part of my day-to-day experience. It's an unexpected treat to be taken away from me at any moment. Sarah's been through 6 years of sex on tap. I can take my body to orgasm easily when I masturbate. Another reason to wonder about being a lesbian. But I never get so deep a sexual experience with men. She thinks she is more inhibited than her friend. I think in a perfect world for you, you would have been made lesbian. But, my sweet, I think you are a rampant heterosexual. Have you considered therapy for the oversexed? Also because I've always been emotionally involved with you, my perfect woman love would be you. But alas, it is never to be. You want men, and I would be afraid to jeopardize our treasured friendship by making it sexual. This is all getting very frank. I feel frank. I heard the women's fiction play. It was good.
Letter to Sarah, May 1984, London. Jill is suddenly beset by doubts. The pots in the workshop. 3, no 4. Have got cracks in them. She's thinking about the people who will see the imperfections. The Arts Council wanted them to be so good. I always seem to make things hard for myself. What you say about moving is true. I really don't mean to keep moving, but I never find a permanent situation. Is it better to have my ideas seen or to hold out for true perfection? Am I letting myself down? I'm going to go to Sussex and forget the whole thing for a weekend. Then when I get the new workshop, I'm going to make a resolution. Perfection or nothing. Jill's found a new workshop but doesn't appear to have started working there. There are 5 of them. The man she hasn't met yet is practical for putting up shelves. 2 girls, Lou and Vanessa, both nice. If you get to see a film called Liquid Sky, do. Did I say that before? She's seeing someone again, and it's nice to have regular sex and someone to go to the pictures with, etc. She remembers breaking into Mark's house when he was out with his new girlfriend, a trainee nurse. She stamped on her earrings and threw them under the bed. Poor girl. The best was getting into his bed and pretending to be asleep when he came home with her. I'll never forget the intensity of that emotion. All the loneliness. A list in Sarah's handwriting, i.e. not Jill's, on the back of the envelope. Glitter, hairdryer, wool, hair colour, leather, lace.
Althea told me about a book titled Bittersweet, Facing Up to Feelings of Love, Envy and Competition in Women's Friendships. Written by Susie Orbach and Louise Eichenbaum in 1987. They describe a number of relationships between women encountered in group therapy in an effort to describe the complex tensions that arise within friendships, specifically in the 1980s. They write, "Women talk uninhibitably with each other about the details of sex, about what they want and what they have in their love relationships. They talk about their fears, their hopes for the future, their fantasies. In the previous decade, women met to talk about their shared experiences. Orbach and Eichenbaum advised women to recognize their differences in order to maintain connections. Quote, "There is an ethos within women's relationships, prevalent whether relationships are informed by feminism or not. An ethos that requires staying in the same place together or moving forward together at the same time. In other words, difference cannot be allowed, and it is experienced as dangerous and threatening, and invokes feelings of abandonment. Orbach and Eichenbaum could be writing about Jill and Sarah. Reading her letters, it's clear that Jill is anxious about their differences, their sexuality and relationships, their living arrangements and working lives.
Two weeks after we read Jill's letters, 29th of October, 2014. Alice, I wrote this on Sunday. You stayed in my bed last night. This morning you asked me what we should do, whether we should write to each other about it. I guess you were asking whether it was relevant, whether it mattered, and if we felt like it did, why? At the library when we were looking at Jill's letters, I remember you saying something about how the personal is political still isn't a universal term. It doesn't apply to everyone. Women's work. In my notes I've written, what occupies the mind? Reading Jill's confessions, the way her thoughts stop and start, quicken, loop. She runs through all the things that take up space for her. All the things that take her away from the right thoughts. Today I've been distracted with fragmented images. Bodies in the dark. The memory of your skin on my fingers. What should we be spending time thinking about anyway? Jill writes, I am not gay. Not completely at least. Too queer to be straight. Too straight to be queer, like Dodie Bellamy said. I've been thinking about Elizabeth Freeman again, temporal drag. What happens to bodies when they meet across time? Freeman asks, what does it mean to take pleasure in or to have fantasies about rubbing up against the past? Jill seems conscious of the inherent temporal drag of her writing. She preempts her reader without knowing when she or they will arrive. Maybe we were haunted. Jill is preoccupied with definitions, with the act of naming. She writes, nobody knows the trials a working potter, artist, embroiderer goes through.
October 30th, 2014. Naomi. I'm reading back through these emails, like you said. We were talking about all this already. Even Judith Butler was. It may also be that despite one's best efforts, one is undone, in the face of the other, by the touch, by the scent, by the feel, by the prospect of the touch, by the memory of the feel. Talk about over-reading. There's also this text message you sent me, weeks ago. Sometimes it feels like these boys are just a way of distracting ourselves from trying to find out what we really want. And there's this project, that we're trying to articulate our influence on each other, the so-called bad kind of influence. That boy might have got you stoned, but he didn't sleep in your bed. I'm reading Sarah Shulman's Empathy again, because I don't think I finished it. The one you picked out from the lesbian fiction section of Waterstones. Anna O says, I like my life the way it is, but when I look around for 1 minute, I get ideas. Ideas about structures. Doc says, you're suffering from empathy. You must have some unresolved past experience. I have to go retouch my makeup now, she says. I feel naked without it.
We ask each other questions. What are we trying to reveal about the material? Is our endeavour about trying to relate to the archive in a way that is not based on revealing or discovering? What does it mean to belong to one generation and yet identify with another? Perhaps it's about performing discovery, but not in an insincere way, letting our desire take over. It's more about using the archive as a means to talk to each other. The archive becomes the material of our conversations, without ever really coming into focus. Just like the art in Sarah and Jill's letters. Why women are labelled as close and open with each other, while artistic, i.e. good, influence is out of reach. You could read our influence on one another as too emotional, too much, too intimate, and therefore never anything other than a bad kind of influence. Certainly not the reasoned, intellectual kind. Desire, envy and competition are parts of artistic influence, the parts that are so often written out. When artistic influence comes into focus, something is lost, recedes into the background. With Under the Influence, we attempt to resist this. The art doesn't come into focus, but neither does anything else. We started this back in March, after we went to Coming Off Clean, a conference at Oxford University exploring women's sexual autobiography.
19th of March 2014. Dear Naomi, I remember you saying, being here, even I feel queer. We speak of ways of being dispossessed, being undone. Maybe we will be undone through proximity and nearness to each other, by the touch, by the scent, by the feel. After you got off at Baker Street, I read this bit in Kate Zambrino's Green Girl about Ruth not showering so time doesn't pass. She lives in her own dirt from yesterday to stave off today. To carry with her the same skin is to allow each day to blend into each other and be one day. Unwashed, she is armoured. Clean, she would be unprotected, vulnerable. Dirt is a blending agent. At the conference, they asked, what would a girl philosopher look like? I would say, the girl philosopher is sometimes full, sometimes hungry, sometimes dirty, sometimes clean, nails painted, dressed, bathed, shaved. Ruth works on the ground floor at a London department store. The perfume she sells is called Desire. Love always. A.
You've been listening to Under the Influence, a series of podcasts produced for Does Not Equal at W139 in Amsterdam. This text was originally performed in collaboration with Linda Stupart at an event organised by Althea Greenham of the Women's Art Library at the Centre for Feminist Research in November 2014. The event included presentations by Salt Magazine and X Marks the Spot, exploring different approaches to working with archives.
Just 'cause I I'm gonna turn it back.